You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to another episode of Nightmare on Film Street, presented by Fangoria.
Yep.
And this week, we're asking you this week to be our dance partner, and let's do the time loop again.
We came up with the title for this episode, this very episode, months ago. Like, I think before we'd even planned on doing a time month. And we've been holding on to it and holding on to it. And it's like so cool that it's finally time to use this goddamn title.
You know, I gotta say, there are a lot of episodes coming up that are all title first, then fill the movies in later. There's a few that I'm really happy about, but
some
whatever.
Some real good puns coming up, guys, in the coming months, so get ready.
Just a little peek behind the curtain on the creative process.
Pun first, then content.
Why not build out from the social media platforms? Why? Anyway.
It's just good marketing.
Exactly. But we begin every episode by asking each other a very simple question. Kim, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, it's actually been a while since we've checked in with you guys. 2 weeks, we're no longer doing the in-between week mini episodes just for the sake of keeping the feed full of full-length content. And so we've seen a few movies in the theater. We caught Fantasy Island, which came out on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of had social media in a bit of a tizzy. A lot of people were seemed pretty angry about it. I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it got a little complicated in the end half. And
sure.
I could have done away with the twist or two. There were a lot of twists on twists on twists. But I don't know. I'm in the middle of winter. There were a lot of beachy, warm-looking scenes.
Oh, you could almost feel it, right? You just start, like, rubbing that, like, warm sun all over yourself.
Is it sad that, like, I do give a full-out summer bump for things? Like, oh, you know what? I'm cold right now. I like all this sunshine.
Oh, I would have liked the Meg a lot more if it came out in February.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, no, we've seen a lot of movies. I mean, we even saw Parasite a second time. Wasn't super nuts about it the first go around. Still not crazy about it, but I liked it a lot more.
Yeah, I like Parasite. I'm just not, like, obsessed with Parasite, which every Parasite take is just like, it's the greatest movie ever. And I want to feel that way. And so we went back because it was just like, am I wrong? Was I wrong in not being obsessed about it? And I still am about the same. Like, I like it more. I notice more things about it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm still just in like with it. I'm a huge fan of Bong Joon-ho's, like, The Host is one of the greatest monster movies of the modern age.
Oh, yeah.
And he does such a great job at implementing, like, individual family stories in his movies. And I think Parasite is him trying to strictly do, like, a family hierarchy story, whereas his other movies kind of weave them in. Like, The Host has an amazing family at the core of it.
And some great social politics in it, too.
Yeah, but the setting is a monster movie.
Yeah, I will also say I think Parasite, after seeing it a second time, is a movie about movie making.
You always think that.
I think that about everything, and I hope you're ready for it, because that's the crux of this fucking episode. speaking of monster movies, though, After Midnight also came out. We weren't able to watch it on Valentine's Day, even though it's a super romantic monster movie. We had to wait a few extra days, but it was worth it. But we also saw Brahms, The Boy, too. Because every roller coaster must hit a valley before it goes up to the peak. Not to give too much away.
If Brahms was a roller coaster, it would be the one, you know, like in the front of the kids section of the park where it's
where
a caterpillar.
Oh, where it looks real cool? Yeah.
No, or it's just a caterpillar that goes around in a circle.
Oh, my mistake. There's
there's no height requirement.
There's always one kid roller coaster that it's like they paint the rails the right way. It's got a cool line. You're like, this, you know, for a kid's coaster, this looks like it could be great. You get in, you're trying, you know, you're not paying too much attention, you're just eating cotton candy all day, and then you're like, here we go, it's the end, we're over, it's done.
We had one when I was a kid. It has since, well, it's still the same name, but it's no longer themed. It was the Ghoster Coaster.
Yeah.
At Canada's Wonderland,
mm-hmm.
And it was Scooby-Doo themed, and there were, like, all kinds of tombstones in, like, the wait, but it's just a wooden coaster, It's just a little kid-sized wooden coaster, and it's dope. I still ride it. I have to sit in a car by myself now because I'm quite large. But
well, as far as kids go, yeah, like you are like a few kids.
I am a few kids large.
I look like I lured two kids into a gingerbread house and ate them before coming to the park.
I look like I lured two kids into a trench coat so I could get on this ride.
You know, unfortunately, was not nuts about Brahms. Wasn't really excited going in, but, you know, pretty good about just sort of clearing the palate.
Clearing the palate.
I don't know if that's the... I don't know. Just, like, purging myself of any... The blank slate I go into a movie. Like, I hope I like this. And unfortunately, yeah, I don't think that's going to make my top 10 of 2020. Had some, you know, interesting ideas. It is not exactly an ambitious sequel by any means, but we're not going to spoil anything here. If you want to hear our full thoughts, spoilers and all, deep dive conversation into Brahms, the boy, too, you can head over to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet right now and check out our Drive Home from the Drive-In review. We actually recorded a little bit before we went into the movie in the car, and then the second half of the podcast is back here in the studio.
Yeah, we wanted to try to do some predictions because neither of us really knew what to expect with the movie, so we were just like, what do we think it will be? Which was kind of fun because we ended up sort of both being right.
Yeah, I think so.
Even though we had wildly different predictions.
So, speaking of predictions and movies that are in the theater, before we get into this week's episode, Kim, are you excited for The Invisible Man?
I am really excited.
Yeah.
So I know before I said that I was kind of cooling to the idea.
It's because you've seen the same trailer like 20 times.
So we've seen a lot of movies in the theater, like more than normal it feels, over the last month or so. And there's been an Invisible Man trailer before every single one of them. So I think I'm just a little burnt out on the trailer. And I was just feeling a little like, meh, about the movie. I'm totally confident in the directing. Lee Whannell is an amazing director, and I think all of the action scenes are going to be fantastic. But I was just kind of feeling just a little burnt out on it. But they had the LA premiere the other night. I think it was like Sunday night or Monday night. And all of the takes on Twitter I've seen have been quite positive. So I'm feeling excited again. I'm feeling the buzz.
Which is good, because The Invisible Man is probably the second best Universal monster.
That's the safest. That full pause in your brain. You were like,
ugh. Oh, that Wolfman's so good. it's hard to say what the best one is, but I think we could all say second best Invisible Man. Claude Rains is incredible. But that has nothing to do with this movie. It's just, you know, they are taking a property that I love. I don't care what they do with it. It's new. It's refreshed. It's something from a person who makes great movies.
I am so happy that the Dark Universe or whatever was kind of dismantled and that they've given this piece to Blumhouse, because these movies need to stay horror movies. They need to stay monster movies. They're not going to survive in that action adventure world.
I'm okay with The Mummy being an action adventure movie.
But Brandon Fraser's The Mummy was perfect already.
That action adventure movie? Yeah.
Was goddamn perfect.
Yeah, and I mean, like, whether the Dark Universe was ever going to happen, it dissolved, and we still got, like, a bunch of remakes of our favorite monster movies. Like, we have The Shape of Water. We have The Invisible Man coming, and I'm very excited. I can't wait. By the time you're listening to this podcast, I will have already seen
it. When we drop it, you are going to be sitting in the theater, with a bag of popcorn, feet up.
Man, I didn't think I could wait, but here I am. Oh, boy. Actually, you know what? We have a huge snow pattern, weather pattern.
What?
Like, we're getting a stupid amount of snow.
Oh, wow.
Beginning tonight.
Oh, really?
The night that we're recording this, and well into Thursday when this movie will release to our local cinema. So,
farts.
We're going to have to strap some chains around them tires, get ourselves out to the movie theater, because I am not missing The Invisible Man.
We're going to be recording a full Patreon-exclusive episode of our thoughts on The Invisible Man, and one of us will be dropping a review on the website. We haven't decided which yet.
Whoever likes it the most.
As soon as we see the film. So we're hoping to have an episode out on Patreon this weekend, and that's at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet, and the review will be hitting nofspodcast.com.
You can always let us know what you thought of The Invisible Man on the Nightmare Hotline at 705-400-9415. It's just a little voicemail box. Call us. Get weird. Tell us what you thought about Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man.
But without further ado, it is time for us to do the time loop again.
Say it with some gusto. Let's come on. You can't just be like, okay, well.
Yeah, but I don't want to sing it.
You don't have to.
Let us do the time loop again. We're kicking it off with Happy Death Day from 2017.
It's your birthday.
Stop global warming.
We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip and party like it's your
you
birthday.
Sneaky little biatch. Maybe you should switch to water next time. Super helpful. Don't be late to the party tonight.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Tree, happy birthday. You scared me.
Girl.
Look, I know this isn't gonna make any sense.
Stop global warming?
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
You sneaky little biatch.
Happy birthday.
I've already lived through this day.
Somebody's gonna kill me tonight.
So you can hear now.
But is everything okay?
Shut up!
Assuming that I believe any of this is even possible.
Sprinklers. Car alarm.
The way I see it, you have unlimited amount of lives. Unlimited opportunities to solve your own murder.
So I'm supposed to keep dying until I figure out who my killer is?
You want to live to see tomorrow, right?
Directed by Christopher Landon, Happy Death Day is currently sitting at a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, 2 out of 4 from RogerEbert.com, 58% on Metacritic, and 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd. That's you guys.
This is a fun one because I think this is our second film that we've covered on the podcast that came out after our inception.
That's right. Get ready to hear us say that for the next 2 years.
Yeah, we wanted to do some fun, fresh movies for our time travel month, and Happy Death Day just seemed like a fun fit because it's not necessarily conventional time travel, but yet it is. Or is it? It is.
It is. We watched this movie twice this week, and which is kind of funny. Like, there's something I do want to say. I think we should host a 24-hour marathon where we watch this movie over and over and
over
again.
Oh my god, John.
Right? Does that not sound fun?
Not really.
Okay, but it's a 24-hour marathon where we have to record a 5-minute review after each watching of it, including you out there. You call into the Nightmare on Film Street hotline, and we just stitch together the most bizarre, rambling episode you've ever heard of in your entire life.
With, like, the level of consciousness from not being allowed to sleep kind of thing?
Yeah.
I feel that.
One time you call in, you're so tired, you think you're ordering a pizza.
And then, like, the answering machine is just like, hey, it's my birthday.
That's good. This is the first time I was able to watch this movie with captions, and it's also the first time that I learned the lyrics to that ringtone.
Isn't it like, oh, I don't even know.
I thought it was, hey, it's my birthday.
Something, pick up the phone.
So now you gotta pick up the phone, which doesn't make sense. But the lyrics are actually, assuming that the subtitles are correct, hey, it's my birthday, so I ain't gotta pick up the phone.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, because it's her birthday. Fuck it.
And that seems in character.
Yes, exactly. But she didn't make that ringtone.
Yeah, did we ever solve the mystery of who set the ringtone?
Well, she asked Tori, her roommate.
Oh, cupcake roommate?
Cupcake roommate.
Okay.
By the way,
what?
The reveal on that fucking cupcake. At the end of the movie, where, like, she gives her the cupcake, she goes, oh, thanks, and then just drops it. Like, too many carbs, can't have it. And we assume...
Did you say the end of the movie or the beginning of the movie?
Yes, this is the end of the movie that this reveal comes. She drops the cupcake. We think it's into a waste bin. At least I assume it's into a waste bin. Cut to an hour and 15 minutes in this movie where you realize she just drops it on the goddamn floor. This is why she wants to kill you, Tree. You're a slob. I'm sorry to derail us.
So let's start with the end of the movie.
It's a time travel movie. Time is weird in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie's a lot of fun. This movie, I forgot how fun this movie is. It's great because it's still kind of a slasher. It still has that slasher template, but it is much more comedic than it has any right to be. It's bizarre. Which is odd because I wouldn't call it a horror comedy.
Yeah, it's almost, well, especially when you factor in the addition of the second one, it's definitely comedy first.
I agree. It is more comedy than horror. But I still wouldn't call it a horror comedy. It's just, it is fun. Like, I think I'm just going to keep chipping back to that.
Yeah, I almost wish the slasher elements were a little bit more prominent in the movie, because the beginning half of the movie, obviously, it's before we're introduced to the time loop stuff. It is straight slasher.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit on high speed, because obviously the plot of this story is only 5 minutes long, so we can repeat it.
Yeah.
I want more of Trevor's baby face. And after that, like, first initial loop, and we get it a bit in the second loop, the rest of Trevor's baby face happens in, like, fast montages, which is great, yeah. If you just want a volume of fun kills and moments.
You don't want a volume of fun kills and moments?
I'm into serial killer movies for the cat and mouse and the chase, I guess.
The chase.
I just want it played out a little bit. I want to see...
You want more sequences like where she's decided to stay home at the sorority, but the killer's already there.
Yeah, the first kill, honestly, is my favorite of the whole thing, where she's going under the bridge and Babyface has the little music box, the birthday box.
Yeah.
And just how he's hiding in plain sight because he's the mascot. Like, that doesn't get played with enough. I want to see more slasher-type moments, but unfortunately, because there's so many other elements that they want to add to the story, they add the time loop, they add a bit of a whodunit mystery, a la Scream.
Yeah.
And they also wanted to make this, like, heartfelt character change from Tree at the beginning to Tree at the end. This had to make her grow!
Yeah.
And it's a little... We're heavily invested on making sure Tree is a good person at the end of this.
Well, I mean, it helps that she's a pretty shitty person at the beginning.
I love her so.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, okay, so you like her in the beginning. That's fine. You like her when she's mean. But could you imagine living with her? That would suck.
She's awful, but it's so...
You say that with such a smile on your face.
It's so refreshing because, I don't know, sometimes I want my protagonist to be Dex.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, it does help that the head of the sorority...
Oh, I love... She's my favorite character, because she's the worst.
I know. How do you... She is such a terrible person, which is great, because she is such a highlight of the second movie. She's like the MVP in Happy Death Day to You. So talking about that first kill that you're so obsessed with, my favorite part of that first kill is when the knife is finally revealed. It's got such a cool fucking sound, and like, that's becoming something
the
that
schling?
I'm... The Yeah, so that's the thing. It's not quite a schling. It's almost like,
The unsheathing.
Yeah, so like, sure, that's what we'll call it. And like...
I like schling better.
Some movies have a better schling than others.
You know my favorite schling? Side note, my favorite schling is the schling at the end of Underworld, when Kate Beckinsale's doing that big sci-fi jump. When she's having her, like, face-off with Papa Victor.
You're talking about specifically when she cuts Papa Victor.
Yeah, and she cuts his head off. So, spoiler alert. And there's the biggest schling of all time. And it's got, like, Nine Inch Nails-y type music underneath it. But they turned that schling up to, like, 120%. Everybody who knows Underworld heard the schling in their head while I was describing this.
Well, yeah, of course.
Do you know the schling?
I know the schling.
Okay. Are you sure?
No.
Okay, describe your schling.
Well, it's almost like a gunshot. Like, it is very... It sounds like the knife is going in. I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of like a punch.
Oh, are you talking
about
the stab?
No, I'm not actually talking about the
You're
stab.
You're talking about the unsheathing.
I'm talking about the unsheathing. See, it's none of these are my words, and they're all coming out of my mouth.
Sorry, tell your story.
It's not. God damn it. This was supposed to be 8 seconds of my life. And here we are, halfway through the podcast, just lingering on this. Fuck.
Tell your story.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you for giving me the floor. So no, yeah, it's most movies will do a schling, and it sounds like the knife is being like dragged across a stone, but it's like it's coming out of somebody's pocket usually. You know what I mean?
it's got sandpaper in there just to make
that
just a little friction.
Oh, I brought the sharpening stone with me so I could go schling. as I took it out. But like, it shouldn't sound like that. It should never sound like that. But in this, it sounds so fucking good. But now I've become obsessed at paying attention to movies when the killer's knife or weapon is first revealed. And if I remember correctly, like, Scream's got a really good one too, like, kind of across the whole franchise. But I like it when...
Do you think the Scream... No, sorry, this is kind of a side note.
That's okay.
Do you think they picked up that knife at the first house they went to, or do you think they came prepared?
In Scream?
Oh, I guess because they have to have the same knife, right? It has to be the exact same knife. Otherwise, you know there were Dubla Ghostface.
That's a real good point.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if one of them had like a pink blade and the other one had a blue blade, that jig is up!
The jig's up. Those two strike me as the type that might go shopping for knives.
And matching sneakers.
Yeah. What's amazing to me is that the knife has become famous in Woodsboro and every killer knows which one to get.
And the voice box too. Like, the mall should just stop selling voice boxes.
Either that or you get put on a list. Like, you go to buy that knife in a voice box, you're on the list.
While we were derailing the podcast, I had another kill that I remembered from Happy Death Day that I really enjoyed. And it's kind of just like an opportunistic kill because it was just like wrong place, wrong time for everybody except for Babyface, where Tree finally realizes that she might be able to break the loop by getting arrested after she's pulled over by a police officer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then Babyface causes a wee car accident and just, you know, being resourceful as Babyface is, uses the gasoline that's leaking from the tank and drops a motherfucking birthday candle.
Right.
Oh, I saw that in the original trailer, but when I first saw it, when we saw this movie in the theater, I still was like...
It's a great touch. Like, so good.
Made my day.
I love to think of Tori bringing that cupcake with her everywhere.
Like, the whole day. Just like, I'm gonna get her to eat this fucking cake.
Maybe she just has the candles in her pocket. Maybe that's all it is.
That's pretty funny. Like, okay, I got my knife, got my killer mask. You know, you grab the extra candles because I spent $1.99 at Dollar Tree.
No, well, you know what? We never actually get to see her post-killing Tree. Maybe she sets a scene. Like, maybe, like, you've got, oh, man, like, the crime scene photos, every single one of them, Tree's dead, blood everywhere, single cupcake, candle burned right down to the frosting.
The weird thing, so we learn about halfway through the film that roommate Tori is doing it, but she's setting it up conveniently because there is a serial murderer currently being treated at the local teaching hospital.
Whose type just happens to be girls, like, who look like Tree.
Yeah, it's like co-eds is his type. Yeah, and so she's going to let him free, throw a little baby mask in his satchel, and she's going to get away scot-free. The baby mask thing seems like a pretty specific MO, but I think because that character is brought into the whodunit like so late in the game, it's just like, this'll just work. This works fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he needed to escape the hospital in a college town,
I guess that's very true. Like,
that's an easy way to blend in.
That's so,
because it does seem like people are wearing those masks all over the place.
It's also kind of weird that teaching hospital has like a clock tower, but maybe it was just like an unfinished elevator shaft with a lot of stairs in it. No, it was a total clock tower.
Total clock tower, yeah. Because she hangs herself off like the rope that they use to ring the bell. Man, it's a good scene.
Yeah, I got to admit, though, like, when we first watched this movie, when they introduced the serial killer plot, at first I was a little confused.
You thought it was too much?
And I was kind of let down. I was just like, you can't introduce the killer so late. I mean, in the end, it all worked out, and I really like the mystery that they crafted. But that first watch, I was definitely really disappointed that it was just like this random stranger comes to town. Do you remember how you felt about it? Were you on board with, like, ooh, random serial killer?
I remember thinking that it was an odd choice. But I knew that it was too early in the movie to be...
The final...
Yeah, yeah. Like, there had to be something else to it.
Also, just how much effort the Babyface killer went to get Tree in all those different scenarios.
Yeah, because it's like, what kind of recon was this guy doing?
Yeah, like, he's before very he got to targeted. The hospital.
Yeah, because he really seeks her out.
And I'm sure he's in there for a reason. Like, what if he's got, like, appendicitis or something?
Oh, yeah, that's like, so true. What if he's like, I don't want to go.
I have surgery in the morning.
I haven't eaten for 12 hours. I'm cleared out and prepped for this.
Dory's just like kicking him like, go kill her.
I'll do it tomorrow. Just retreats back into his college self once he hits campus. Oh, that's man. Funny. And I also remember thinking that the ending was just a little like, not maybe not abrupt, but once it was revealed that it was Tori, it seemed clean.
Yeah.
I'm into it now. I like it.
And I think also too, because Tori's motive was pretty simple. It was like, you're sleeping with the same teacher I'm sleeping with and it hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
There was nothing set up for that previously. I mean, I guess Tori was a little irritated at Tree when she was getting in the elevator at the beginning of the movie because she knew where she, like, she knew she didn't have classes in the hospital and was like, what are you doing here?
Well, what's interesting about that part is that she's already failed at trying to kill her. She tried to give her the cupcake.
True.
She didn't eat the cupcake. She sees her again and it's like she's giving her a warning, like, because at this point, it hasn't occurred to her to let the serial killer free so she could kill her herself. I think it's after that elevator sequence where she goes, oh, this bitch is going down.
Oh, true.
It's like, I tried to kill her. It didn't work. We're back to square one. Or maybe like, whew, okay, let's put that idea behind us. But when she's like, hey, you know, you should really maybe, it's none of my business, but I think this is a dangerous game you're playing. She's like, yeah, you're right. It is none of your business. Fuck off, Tori. Like, that's her signing her life away.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, because maybe she didn't have any intentions to be Babyface until the cupcake was thrown on the ground.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting way to watch the movie.
You know what I love about this
makes
movie?
It way more impulsive.
Yeah, she's an evil person. And not because she's trying to kill Tree or because she successfully kills Tree like 1,000 times. But because she knows that it was her mother's birthday. When she comes into the dorm, she's like, oh, it's my mom's birthday. I know it's a tough day or whatever for you and your dad.
Here, have this poison.
Have some
cake.
Poison. Yeah. Like, this is going to fuck her dad up forever.
Yeah. Well, Tree's obviously, like, super annoying, though, and she's probably hated her for a real long time.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Weird thing, like, so I understand why we don't get Tori more, but in the few scenes we see her, they play her like a real goody-goody, and that's purely so we don't suspect her, but knowing that she's the murderer, I wish there were more scenes with her because I love that killer that's so resentful that they resort to killing, and it's so against their nature because she's obviously, like, she comes off as like an overachiever, especially because the rest of the sorority don't seem to like her. And
she's never around.
Well, and the head sorority girl, like, low-key in one of the loops, says something about, like, getting rid of her.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's at the party, maybe, when they have a little bit of back and forth.
Okay.
So we can't get more Tori because obviously the more time we spend with her, they're going to have to divulge more of her animosity towards Tree. But I wish we got to see more of her because I want to see that kind of resentment leaking out. But obviously it would give us too much evidence.
It didn't even occur, like, you're right, they can't do that. But it didn't even occur to me until you were talking about the sorority jerk talking shit about Tori. It's because she's not at the party. That's why she's mad. They're all supposed to go as a group and do stuff together. Or
yeah.
And, like, she is at the party. She's just dressed up like a killer.
She's just busy working.
Which leads to my favorite kill of the movie. The fucking
the
pleasure
rave room
dome.
One?
The pleasure
oh,
dome.
God.
It's so funny. It's so cringe. And it works so well. By the way, didn't notice until we watched it a second time last night. There's a dioptic shot in that scene where she's sort of turned her back to his dumb dance.
Oh, she's texting or whatever?
Yeah, like, because she's in focus texting, and in the background we see Tori as the Babyface killer come in and kill him, and, oh, that scene plays out like gangbusters. I love it.
It is a fun scene. Like, that's really playing with, like, the traditional slasher format because, like, we've already had that guy dressed up as the Babyface, and so she's disarmed, but she still kind of has the memory of being murdered before,
right?
So she's also a little on edge. And,
like, even if none of that happened, it's like, nobody wants this, buddy. Like, this is bad.
Yeah, and then also he's just like, let's fuck.
Yeah, right?
In my weird, like, bro room.
Oh, boy.
Bro room of should be shame.
Oh, it's so gross. It's
bro room of shame is like a t-shirt I want now.
That's a good t-shirt. That's a flag you should just make and hand out to dudes as they sign up for frats. But also she's like, it's a little loud in here. And she literally can't hear him being murdered.
Yeah, that's pretty wonderful.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, and the fact that when she gets into the room, there is a moment where she's like, oh, look, a huge, crazy, weird bong, which is...
Oh, yeah.
which Tori, the babyface killer, ends up smashing and stabbing her in the throat with. It's so,
that'd be so smelly.
Good. Yeah, I know, that's the stinkiest death. Also, nobody's gonna see that crime scene and relay that info to her dad and not think like, well, here we go. Another weed death in the books. Like, 420 kills kids. I want you to remember that. This girl got so high that she was stabbed in the face with a bong. Drugs kill kids. What do you think about Carter in this movie?
I was just gonna bring that up.
Okay.
So there's two things about this movie that I'm not totally down with.
It's not the hallway shots, because I think the hallway shots in this movie are great.
Okay.
Yep.
I was gonna say the love story and the connecting with dad, my mom's dead story.
Oh yeah.
I have to admit, you know, if this movie catches me on the right day, I'll totally get a little watery eyed when Tree has her big sad log.
Yeah.
When she visits dad for tea or whatever. But otherwise, it just feels like stop pulling at my heartstrings for the sake of closing out this movie. Mm. You know what I mean? Which is maybe a little catty of me, but I want catty Tree. And if we get her a decent boyfriend and rebonding with her dad, she doesn't get to be a deck in part two. So, I don't know. I just like her evil. And I know we have to, like, grow as a character, but, like, do we have to grow that much?
You don't think they're going to completely reset everything once? Well, I guess we did that in Happy Death Day 2. Ooh, I hope in Happy Death Day 3, that girl who's sitting out in the porch just, like, listening to music when Tree comes home gets, like, a whole story arc.
I know, because they totally did that with Carter's roommate.
Yeah.
He was literally just like, did you bang that fine vagina? And then in part two, he's like, top bill.
Yeah, exactly. He's the protagonist. Oh, it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Oh, man, you know, they're still, what's up with that car? We still haven't figured out why the car is going off, right?
The car alarm?
Yeah.
Does it matter?
No, but that is laying the foundation for a trilogy. I know.
Oh,
it.
Boy.
I know it. Do you think they knew what they were going to do with the rolling blackouts? Like, my question, I guess, is one, were the rolling blackouts there specifically so we could have a marker of time? And, like, there are things happening that signify repetition? Or was it there as foundation for the sequel, or is it both? Like, is it just like, oh, here's electricity, we could do something with electricity,
yeah,
maybe?
I think it was like an opportune thing. Like, it was a nice little I guess learning moment in part one, because Tree has repeated the time, like, the day so much that she knows the exact moment when the blackout is.
Yeah.
Which is fun when the alarm goes off and it saves her from being murdered by that gross serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, but like when you're doing a second one and you're like, let's go hard into this time travel bit. It's just a perfect little nugget to tie the two together.
Yeah.
There definitely won't be a part three, though.
You don't think so?
No, I think Jason Blum tweeted about it after part two.
Oh, really?
Because people were just like, what is this not horror movie?
I remember that.
And I don't know if it made as much money as they had wanted. Which is sad, because I love when a movie does a weird thing. And part two definitely did a weird thing.
Yeah. And I mean, Christopher Landon can definitely build out a universe. So.
Yeah. I think the problem is that part three would, if they continue on this like sci-fi journey, takes it away from like what we know and love from Team Blumhouse.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because now we're into like the government, right?
Yeah. Like, yes. I think it's like a lot less Blum than we're used to.
Oh, it's going to be the whole world. It's going to be a particle accelerator. And like only one person knows that the whole world keeps looping. It's yesterday, but happy death. Happy death yesterday.
Happy death, deathsterday? Death, oh, I'm done.
Yeah. And this is why there isn't a third one.
Did you say your favorite kill of the...
It's the Pleasure Dome.
Oh, yeah.
It's too much fun. That and when she gets hit in the head with the baseball bat and she falls onto the pillow. Like,
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it just looks fantastic.
Yeah, especially because it's only part of a montage, so we don't get to see much of that whole day.
Yeah.
But in it, and I only noticed it this last time that we watched it, she's still wearing Carter's shirt in that day.
Yes, yeah.
So that when her head does the flip from being hit with the baseball bat to falling so gently onto the bed, she's in her morning clothes.
Yep.
Which is perfect.
So smart.
Yeah, that was just like a great, like, who cares what happened in that day for her not to change? It was just a...
Actually, it doesn't make sense, because she's supposed to have fallen asleep in her like going out party shirt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Still works.
Yeah, it's great. Why does that guy... Okay, this is the last thing I need to bring up. In the loop where she's being a nice person, you know, Carter has just saved her life. Everything's looking rosy. She's met the guy of her dreams, and she's gonna be a nice person from now on. And she brings the pillow to, like, put under the guy so he falls gently. She warns everybody about the,
sprinklers.
The sprinklers. But she takes that weird, like, goth kid's sunglasses. Goth's not even the right word. He's just, like the unofficial seventh member of Velvet Underground. Why does he let her take his sunglasses? They look expensive. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about before we get to ratings?
I think we've covered it all. Okay. I mean, that's the thing about this movie, too, is that it's just very, like, fast and fun, and there's not a whole lot to it at the end of the day, like, which is weird to say because it's, like, a time loop movie that deals with time travel and all kinds of stuff like that, but it's not too deep of a movie.
Yeah, doesn't have to be.
No, and I mean, I think it's PG-13, like, the target age group is new horror fans, young horror fans, so, like, I think this is a perfect movie. If this had to come out when I was in high school,
oh, yeah,
I would have lost my mind.
Can you imagine if you were in high school, like, right now, like, your favorite movies would be Happy Death Day and Ready or Not.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right, high school you, ready
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, that's fun.
And then somebody slides across, like, your detention room desk, like, yo, you should check out this classic movie. It came out a long time ago. It's called Underworld. I think you're going to like it.
Schling!
So ratings. How would you rate Happy Death Day?
I'm going to give Happy Death Day 2.5 out of 4.
I think that might have been how you rated it in the movie theater, too. I'm giving Happy Death Day a 3 out of 4. Because it's got that 0.5 fun bump.
Fun bump?
Yeah, got that fun bump.
Did you give it a schling bump?
No. I should. It's got good Foley artists. Giving it that fun Foley bump.
Nightmare on Film Street is listener supported. We'd like to take this moment to thank our patrons. Are you ready? Thanks. Want to join the Fiend Club? Hightail it to patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street.
Moving on, we're going to talk about another time loop movie that's quite a bit more serious. We're talking about Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead's The Endless.
Whoever's watching, I just wanted to say The Ascension is something that we've all been looking forward to. We couldn't be happier.
I want to go back. One day, one night, we come straight back.
Good to see you two. And what the dickens brings you all the way out here?
Just thought we'd visit while you're here.
We're always here.
I used to make a lot of your clothes, you remember that?
They're all in like their 40s, they just look young. It's weird.
Why come back now?
The video you sent.
What video?
Possible.
You want to know what runs all this? You go find it.
Woo. Who's next?
We can't go back to our lives.
Also from 2017, The Endless is currently sitting at a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb. 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. 3.5 out of 4 at RogerEbert.com, 80% on Metacritic, and 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
So we've seen this movie a few times.
Sure have.
A few times.
Yep.
A few times.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
I time looped. It
Very
was good.
Good. Yeah. I was here to witness it.
Thanks.
We're out now.
Oh.
Sans explosion.
We escaped. This movie. I would like to read this movie as a book, if that makes
sense. Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah, this feels like the best book I have never read.
Okay.
I do really enjoy this movie because it has such a well-thought-out premise. So interesting and engrossing and just like, I'm completely invested in every new scenario the movie wishes to show me.
Okay.
I have to say, though, there are still a lot of, like, questions I have, and the movie, especially getting into it, because the way the film starts, every time I watch it, I feel like I have missed something at the beginning.
Right at the beginning?
Yeah, I almost feel like it's a sequel and it's kicking off right after the last one ended.
Okay.
And it's like, I have this weird, like, where was the previously on kind of feeling. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And maybe it's because the two lead brothers are already out of this cult. They are kind of well on their life and they're already at the point where they're like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
And then they get this random tape and we're being reintroduced to like the life they left behind through these conversations they're having with like a cult therapist or like a deprogramming.
I think, yeah, that's how they refer to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they've been out of the cult for 10 years. They get the mysterious videotape and one of them, Aaron, wants to go back.
Yeah.
Because he has no memory of it being bad. It's just kind of like a cool commune that these really nice people lived at where we ate lots of great food and stuff. And he can't help but look at his current life where they are like living paycheck to paycheck, barely paying their bills. I think they're on some sort of disability. Like that's why they're still in deprogramming therapy 10 years out.
Yeah.
And he's hating it.
I guess the weird thing is that like we're never fully told the story at the beginning, what the cult was like and why they left it and the scenario surrounding why they left it. Because we see these glimpses that they escaped, but their memories are hazy and vague of the cult. I found myself asking you several times throughout the movie, like, how long have they been out of this cult? Just because of how like hazy the memories are and stuff. It's almost like maybe I would have been happier if there was just a paragraph at the beginning of the movie, like one of those superimposed, like, in 2008, Aaron left the something-something cult because they were gonna suicide themselves.
Yeah.
And that never happened, and now they're sad about it. And then the movie starts. I just needed something, because we find out that Justin's motivations for leaving the cult were true, were honest. He did kind of stretch how upfront and devious the cult actually was in order to fully cut ties between his brother and himself and the cult, if that makes sense.
You know, totally. I think he also maybe, you know what, do you think maybe the haziness is part of it, though? Like, do you think the fact that they have been out of there. Man, this is going to start getting real deep. I hope you've seen The Endless, guys. We are going to start getting very deep into it. It's available on Netflix. It's available on Hoopla. If you don't have Netflix, you can watch it for free through your library right now.
If your library has Hoopla.
If your library has Hoopla. I mean, there are opportunities and there are ways to see this. And it is a incredibly well thought out movie, and every time we watch it, I see something new and I have a better understanding of it. And unfortunately, I think we kind of need to talk about it as a whole. And we're going to pull from bits of the end and the middle and stuff even right now. But do you think that the fact that they've left the cult area is part of it? Like, you think things are hazy because they're not there?
Yeah, maybe. But should they be all the way hazy for us as the audience?
Okay, sure. I see what you're saying. That's
if
fine.
We superimpose some text at the beginning, or got it previously on.
You know, that number one rule in movie making. Tell me, don't show me.
Shut up, John. maybe it's just because this movie is unlike others in that it does require several watchings. Because, like, I would say that the last time I watched it was the first time I realized that, like, where the tape came from, that they were sent initially. Because I was like, why did this girl send them the tape? Why is she lying? For the last, like, four times I've watched it.
But you sort of explain that away as cult behavior, right? You know, like, they want them back. They sent them this weird tape. And it sounds like in the tape they might be ready to commit suicide or something, right? Like,
But why would you be primed to, like, go back from that creepy tape we got?
I know, that's the weird thing about Aaron, but he has no memories of it being a scary place.
Yeah.
And based on the tapes, they haven't killed themselves and everything's cool. And I mean, realistically, the only reason we look at that tape as being anything weird and creepy is because of what we think of cults. Like, the tape really is just a, hey guys, you know, if you come by and we're not here, just let you know, we'll
be
back
soon.
Why
would they come by, though?
It's not, the tape's not for them specifically. She, like, when they talk to her later and he asks her, why'd you send the tape? And she says, I didn't. And the videotape that they recorded was just one that they left in case somebody came by. If we can move away from the videotape. That's, goddamn, goddamn. There's so much to talk about in this movie. there's almost too much to talk about in this movie. And I think maybe part of what makes it maybe a little harder to watch than some other movies is that this movie that these guys made, who they are starring in and playing characters that have the same names as them, which is maybe possibly very important, I'm not sure, also deals with their career, like their whole career leading up to that
movie. What are you talking about?
What am I talking about? They go to their own movie in this movie. Like, they go to their first movie, and there's video footage of them as cult members when they're, like, 17, 18. That's from a failed project that they put together when they were younger.
Really?
So, yeah. So, they're, do you remember the characters that they, that Justin goes to see in, like, the unfinished house?
Yeah, so I know that, because I did want to watch that movie before we recorded this, but alas, we have not.
From what I remember, because we have seen it before, but it's been a little while.
Is that a time loop movie?
Don't remember. So we watched it very late one night. What I remember of a person is going to see a longtime friend that they've sort of gotten a little distance from, and this person has become a drug addict, and he's kind of just going to check in on him and see if he's okay, and then he ends up chaining him up to get him to do a cold turkey kick, right, on drugs. He's gonna help him out, he's gonna help him get sober, and then they get a videotape while they're there of them, like somebody's watching them. And then it kind of gets eerie and weird from there. Literally, that's all I remember that movie, which is a shame because it's a shame we didn't have time to watch it before this, but I don't think you need to know too much about that anyway. Like, it's fun knowledge to know that, like, they're visiting one of their own films, and the footage of them as younger cult leaders, or as younger cult people, is from a movie that they were working on but never released, where they play two people that are left behind when a cult ascends.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so now they're searching the world for their cult.
That's fun.
Yeah, and they're trying to figure out how to ascend. But I guess they didn't like it, and they thought it was embarrassing. But it provided good footage for them when they were putting this together. Because it almost looks like, you know, them at the age when they left the cult in the storyline of this movie. TLDR. This movie deals with loops. And there are several loops within the movie. And as the characters sort of explore outside of the cult, we realize just how short or just how long some of those loops are. In fact, they find a loop that is literally only 5 seconds. And then they find another loop. The cult, which we reveal later, is 10 years long.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Go on.
Yeah, like, where do we go from here? I think it's kind of interesting that Aaron wants to go back, like, right as the loop is about to close.
Or start again. Yeah,
start again. Because by the sounds of it, I would think they left right before it.
Last time.
Yeah, because Justin was starting to get these feelings that, like, oh, we are building towards something and they're about to quote-unquote ascend or whatever. Because they worship whatever it is that resets this loop.
Yeah.
And they escaped just in time. Because if they hadn't, they would be stuck there with them forever, looping the same 10 years over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Also, man, okay, so can we maybe just take a step back from the movie?
Sure.
Don't say it like that!
We sure can.
What do you think of the loops as?
Oh. I thought you were just asking my opinion in general. And I love loops.
Yeah, can I get a quick pulse check on loops?
Love loop.
Okay.
The guy in the, like, World War I tent with his, like, 2.5 second loop.
Okay.
That is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I think that was, like, on our best scares of 2017.
I would watch that terrifying shit on, like, ugh.
So, do you...
We need to put sound on GIFs, because that's what I would like. Like, that is the greatest thing ever!
What a
horrible
existence.
That makes this whole movie for me. If that scene wasn't in there, I'd be like, yeah, I almost was okay. But that just is... That is the scariest scenario for this loop shit.
Yeah, especially because he only lives long enough to realize...
That he has to kill himself.
Oh, man.
And because the loop monster, or the loop alien, or whatever, the loop god... Yeah. We'll make, because we find out the death that at the end of the loop is far worse than anything you could inflict upon yourself.
Yeah.
Which is romantic for the fucked up cult at the top of the hill. Cult, yeah. But for somebody whose loop is only 3 seconds long, like, that's insane.
Do you think that this, because it also does seem like the loops are continually getting longer and longer, is the, we'll call it a god. Does that sound fine? Do you want to call it an alien or a god?
I don't know. I don't really like the big being in the sea.
The entity. I don't... we'll get to it. The thing that is looping everything.
Yeah.
Either it's gotten better at it, or it's wanted to get longer and longer loops.
How do you know that the loops are getting longer? Like, where are you supposing that?
I'm supposing that from the fact that the shortest one we have is the oldest person. Because he is definitely...
Oh!
Explorer type, almost. Like, I would say he is the first person that's encountered that area.
Okay.
And it's almost... Maybe it's literally just that you... If you think of this thing, this entity, as some sort of scientist, like it's discovered humans in the same way that humans have discovered it, it's kind of like a little plaything for them. Like, I wonder what this thing does. And then they kill it. And then they just kind of like keep killing it over and over and see like what kills it and what it's made of. And so that's why this guy's only in the shortest loop. And then they think, well, maybe these humans are worth more than that. Let's give it 10 minutes and see what it does.
Hmm.
Then let's give it
That's
an
a very
hour
good
and
theory.
See what it does.
How I always looked at it was like more like topical, like a map, and treated it almost like what a coral would look like, and how you have all these different loops, and depending on how wide the space is the amount of time. Like how deep the loop is by like the radius of the loop. Like the gun nut tweaker guy has like I think they have a couple hours because it's just like the property around the house. And then there's that guy that lives in the shed and he only has a couple of hours because it's just his shed.
Yeah.
But the cult has a ton of time because they have a whole commune.
Yes. What's interesting about the cult is that they really use their time to master something.
Yeah.
Like they really look at their time as purposeful, which is kind of like if there is a thing that is making the loop, either the thing made the loop that long because it wants to see what those people do, or those people are only doing something because they think the thing wants it to do a thing.
I also think that they need to like give themselves purpose, otherwise they're gonna go mad.
They're gonna go mad. Yeah, totally. And like, so some of them master beer making and some of them master card tricks and magic and photography, like whatever. Like it's like they have their own little thing and they just focus on it over and over again. So these guys are filmmakers. Oh, man, I don't know where to start unpacking stuff in this movie. So given that Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who are acting in their own movies, are filmmakers, and Resolution, a movie of theirs, is inside these loops, do you ever wonder if the loops are all ideas they've had?
Ooh.
And the bigger the loop, the better the idea, or the more detailed the idea.
Because like, they're more developed as filmmakers.
Yeah. You have ideas for short films or for movies, but sometimes all you have is an image. Like maybe a guy scared in a tent who commits suicide,
but
you don't know why.
This is wonderful to think of this as almost like biographical. Or like...
Yes. Yeah. Like they are walking through their own ideas.
Yeah. Now, and they're deciding where they want to stay. Is like, fuck.
Now, can I ask you something? Like, are you ever happy with anything you make? Like, whether it's a screenplay or a review
when
or
it's
a
new,
podcast
but then
episode,
whenever you revisit it, you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. And it's out there forever and it's done and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's almost cruel to let that thing you've created exist imperfectly. And there's nothing you can do about it. And people, especially if it's a movie, people will just continue to watch it.
Oh my god, I've never looked at this. Why have you never had this discussion with me before?
I don't know. Like, maybe it's because I knew we'd do it on a podcast. Or we just...
Shit.
We just never
I never
talk
watched
about
it like that.
But here's the other thing, too, is, like, I think they are maybe, not simplifying, but, like, trying to simplify the idea of life. Everything is a loop. Your 9-to-5 job is a loop. There's your easiest loop that people can relate to. But the idea that, you know, you have kids and then those kids grow up and they have kids. Or maybe even if you believe in reincarnation, like life is a loop. Even if you don't believe in reincarnation, the universe is expanding and it will implode and then it will be another big bang and it will start over again. Because
and your atoms are
going to
be something else, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, right? But it's still going to be a loop.
Yeah.
And I one thing I keep flip-flopping on when we watch this movie is whether the loop is bad or not. Like, is the outside of the loop the world where they have said it's worth struggling to be a filmmaker? Or is the world where, like, inside the cult, the it's worth being a filmmaker? Because you dedicate your entire life to something over and over, and at the end it's still not going to be satisfying, but you've mastered it? Like, I'm not 100% sure. And especially the discussions between Aaron and Justin, it sounds like the life where they're working really shitty minimum wage jobs... Where what kept them going was a promise of something is the filmmaker grind. or just the artistic grind.
Hmm.
Also, if I'm just in the...
I'm sorry, I'm just absorbing your
theories. I know, and
if
I'm just unpacking ideas here, it is really interesting when you think about those loops as being part of their creative process, and they have become characters in their own thing, that that car crash where their mother died and they were saved by the members of the cult is the beginning of the loop. That's the barrier of the loop.
Yeah.
So as character...
I was going to ask you about that, what your theory was, because it's very... If we didn't pair this with like a time travel-y movie, I wanted to pair it with Hereditary eventually and called it Markers on the Road.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because I feel like there's a big significance where the car accident happened, but I have no idea what it is.
Well, it's something that you commonly see in film, but it is true about people in real life, and like, unfortunately, traumatic experiences can define you.
Yeah.
And you have to...
Well, and yeah, like there's a before and an after, like
yeah.
Before their mom died and after their mom died. Like that's
exactly.
A big tentpole in their life.
But there is also
like the start of another loop for them.
But it's also an after your mom died and after you accepted a life without her. Like there is like, let's call it the grieving process, you know, where you've got denial and bargaining and blaming and everything. You have to grow out of that, and you have to evolve as a character. And it's they don't really fully accept that, and that they have to leave their past behind and become new people until the end of the movie when they leave their loop. It's interesting because, like, they are almost the creators of that loop, in my mind.
So that's a loop that's controlled by them.
They live there for 10 years.
Hmm.
And the loop is 10 years long. And they come back again 10 years later. It's like they can never escape that loop.
But it's like a loop of their own making kind of thing?
Yeah, it's
that's some deep shit, John.
But it's...
You know, this is way different than what I wanted to talk about with this film. I wanted to talk about what we think about the tug of rope theory.
Yeah, what's up with that tug of rope? I mean, you know, if you want to talk, the struggle is real. I think that's all
it is.
What is
that game? I don't understand. Why are they playing with the big alien in the sky? What does it mean?
I don't know. I don't want to get, like, too weird about it or anything.
But I would like you to.
I don't, but it doesn't... This is like my knee-jerk reaction to just be like, you're always fighting against something that you can't see and just like some unknown force who's bigger than you and stronger than you, but like if you're determined enough, you can win. It's just like...
It's weird though. Like, why is a big omnipotent entity who can make time loops like playing team-building games with a cult?
I mean, if you believe in God, why did God create a bunch of people who sit here and suffer and hate their lives? Especially the person who made them. I don't really have an answer for you about this.
Tell me about the tug of rope. I guess I'm just not too into the fact that the God thing is like, the more I watch this, it's a more present entity.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time I see the film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are moments where you actually kind of see it.
Yeah. And like the fact that it drops like Polaroids and tapes and it gets them to go out in the boat and stuff. I guess I'm just not huge into the communicating part of it. Which is what sets off this whole movie into motion. Like, that's what sets the tape out. And so, like, that one thing, the fact that the entity communicates through dead media is, it seems almost beneath something that can twist time.
Now, I don't know 100% that this movie is everything that I'm talking about, you know, but all of that media that it's using to communicate with them is media that existed before the timeline of the movie. Which is essentially, the way I see it, like, influence and inspiration. Like, ideas come to you, and unfortunately they're good, and unfortunately you're gonna follow them through to the end, and it's gonna take 10 years of your life to do it.
So you're just more on this filmmaker theory.
Yeah.
If you don't have that filmmaker theory, like, what do you chalk it up to?
I would chalk it up to the same idea, but it doesn't have to be about filmmaking. It can just be about... like inspiration for how to live your life, or just like thoughts that go into your head and just dictate what you do. I have a hard time not looking at this as a movie about the creative process. Like, it doesn't have to be about film. It could be about painting. It could be about whatever the fuck, right? But the fact that we like go into their movies and stuff is really what makes me really solidify that down. It's like I bring it up all the time, but like David Lynch is. Twin Peaks season 3, I swear to God, they treat the characters as though the characters realize their
Welcome
own existence.
Welcome to John Theory. The new segment that you, that's not really a new segment.
Because it's here every week.
Get going, John, Twin Peak Theory.
I think it's like you treat these characters with so much respect and you think about them so much that they become real to you and that you imagine that they have lives outside of the page or outside of the movie. And that's kind of what's happening here. It's almost like Lisa going into the little tooth land.
Using that as like, I love referencing that segment. It's the best
like somebody
little god story. Yeah.
Somebody experiencing their own creation.
Yeah.
In any way. But yeah, that's.
I've created Lutherans.
Get me some magazines.
And some shoes. Nice ones.
I feel like I just wasted this entire podcast in just asking you a few questions. And I'm sorry about that. I don't have like answers for a lot of it. I think some of it's just fucking cool. Like, whatever. Like, eventually we'll figure it out. But like, for now, I'm just going to let it wash over me. Like, why is it so weird when those guys are picking up the beer?
Yeah.
Right?
And everybody's giving shifty eyes. Okay, so here's one I want to talk about because I think it adds another fun little side story to the main loopy loop.
Yep.
When Justin like kind of separates from the bonfire and he meets the sad woman who's looking for her husband.
Yeah, who's the guy from the movie Resolution.
Yes. And we find that out later on in the movie. Yeah. But she's not like indoctrinated by the cult, if that makes sense. Like she is just like over their nonsense. But also the lead of the cult has kind of promised her that they would find her husband. But we know that the cult can't leave their circle. And they know that they're not going to be able to help her. So, like, what's going on there?
I think they trust in their creator.
Are they just trying to catch her in the loop, though? Because at the very end, before the loop ends or reloops or whatever, we catch her. Like, she just speeds past the screen on, like, on a bicycle to, like, I assume, get the fuck out of there before the loop closes.
She can't escape, though. I think it's just one of those, like, frustrated trying to, like that guy.
Do you think she's already looped? Do you think
it's... Oh, yeah, she's definitely stuck there.
Oh.
Yeah. I think she just
So I think that's just a sign that this cult is awful and that the cult leader is a huge dink. Why would he let her loop? And why would he promise her that he could help her find her husband?
You know, I grew up going to church. And there were plenty of times where I saw some people that really looked like they felt they were promised something that they weren't getting. And the answer was essentially to continue believing in that promise. And even as a kid, I saw that and thought it was very...
That's really sad.
Not right.
Ooh.
But, I mean, if you're a person of faith, you're supposed to have faith. Like, the idea of having faith is not questioning it. It's about having faith. It's about that you are giving yourself over to a higher power, and it is the better thing. And, like, whether or not you have all the answers, or even if it has all the answers, that we are all better by having faith. It's like, if we all have the same idea, then the same idea is good. And I think that's maybe part of what it's come to. Like...
Side note on the promise things. I don't know if I've told you this before. So, like, let's just do this live on the podcast.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I got really sick.
Uh-huh.
I almost died. I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm good.
We're all very happy about that.
When I first got sick, my grandma, who is a very devoutly religious woman, got so mad at God that she didn't talk to him for a whole week. And then she put me in a prayer circle and it was all better.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. I remember, you know, like being really sick and getting a kick out of that.
Like, oh, grandma.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was like a devout woman like her entire adult life. So, and she was just like, how dare you?
It's funny. Like,
and then she felt bad because she got mad at God.
Of course. Yeah. No, like that's one of those like things that like you can't really understand the weight of it unless you've been with that character for 11 seasons. You know, like... That's a big thing for grandma to do.
Yeah. Man, that story about the religious childhood thing, that was really dark, John.
I can't even necessarily give you specifics.
I know, but I can totally, I definitely see where you're coming from.
But like the thing that's interesting about that too is seeing how both of these people, like a person desperately in need and who doesn't have answers and a person who doesn't really have answers, but is there for support.
It's like at the, yeah.
That's a weird one. Because like you can see in their eyes too that it's just like, I don't know if what I'm doing here is the right thing to do. But I've made, not that I've made the decision, but it's like, this has always been the guiding principle for me.
And if I stop believing in it, then like, I can't do that because I have to continue in this loop regardless.
Yeah, and I think that's just where the idea of faith comes into play. Like,
yeah.
It's just, you have to have it. You're either on the bus or you're off the bus.
I guess the weird thing is that in that scenario where the wife is stuck in the commune loop, the 10-year loop,
yeah.
Her husband is in the junkie loop. Him and his friend almost don't have a full memory of their loopage.
Yes.
Because he seems a lot more at ease and just like, not at the will of the loop, but they assume it's going to end at some point. And so he's kind of just like keeps shrugging it off and until he can get out and see his wife and kid. But he still believes his kid's a baby.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I think there are definitely some moves that they take in this movie to help you watch it without thinking of it as a movie about filmmaking or just like artistic
like
stuff.
Regular viewers, like
yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I'm kidding. It's been very insightful, John.
And I think that's part of it. I think her storyline helps with it. It's tough because it does seem like maybe this entity is trying to make bigger and bigger loops, and by getting Justin and Aaron back, that's kind of its attempt at making a bigger loop. Like, it was able to send them a videotape. How big is its loop? Is the world not just a big loop? We circle around the sun, we rotate, like we're all part of that big bang that's going to eventually happen again. Like, it's,
stop
it's,
with your end of
it's
the universe
all a loop. But seriously, like, it's all a fucking loop.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, where does the loop end?
The Polaroids and stuff drop from the sky within the loop, so they're obviously in another loop to be able to get the tape in their apartment.
Yeah, nobody put it in a post box because they can't leave the loop. They can't do that. That entity has complete domain.
Ew.
Yeah, it's inescapable.
That's depressing.
Yeah, I know. I like it. It's my brand.
Okay, so some fun chatter.
Yeah, kinda, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, I'm going to take us to some fun chatter.
Oh, okay.
You are in a loop.
Ah.
Which character in this movie is your response? Like, how would you react to being in a loop? Who's the best character to personify your reaction to being looped? I'm definitely the guy that hangs himself in his shit.
Yeah.
I am very angry.
I fucking love that scene where he gets on that bike and he's just staring out into the darkness at it. Oh, it's good.
I just think it's funny how much effort he goes to getting a gun just so he can, like, kill himself with a gun for, like, 5 or 6 times.
Well, it's the only thing that he has any control over.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, depending on what type of person you are, also true about life sometimes. Like, in your darkest moments.
John! Stop taking us there!
I would be, and it's not just because we both have beards, I would be that guy brewing beer. And not just not because...
The brooding in the background?
Yeah, brooding in the background.
Frowning at everyone who does magic tricks.
Well, see, I think he's an interesting character because he is very, like, Switzerland about things. Because he's like, they shouldn't be here. Like, unless they want to. Like, they're adults.
Yeah.
They can make the decision that they want, but no one should be here. We are here, and we're doing what we can about it, but we should not be happy about it. Especially not the way you're happy about it, because it's not going to bring them any happiness surrendering over to this fucking thing.
Yeah.
I really like him. I think he's a really interesting character. And I also think he intervenes and he steps in, because if it wasn't for him opening the shed and letting them see all of the tapes and the footage
because,
of themselves,
like, it's
right?
been centuries, right? Like,
I would think.
Because there are some, like, dates in that shed.
Yeah, it's insane. It never ends. But, yeah, this movie's got a lot going on, and I hope that the next time I watch it, I can watch it without everything that I've just kind of talked about here. Like,
I'm excited to watch it with the filmmaker angle, because I never saw that before.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, like, this conversation has been entirely new to me as a film-going experience. I'm just like, why the tug-a rope?
The tug-a rope is still a little, I think that's just you.
And the boat! And the thing under the boat!
The thing under the boat is strange. I'll give you that. But I mean, sometimes you gotta like lock yourself in a little room, isolate yourself until those ideas really come to you.
Yeah, but for an entity that can drop Polaroids out of the sky, like why do they have to go to the bottom of the lake for it? Riddle me that, John.
I won't lie to you. One of my least favorite parts of the movie. It looks great. It's awesome. It's kind of creepy-ish, but it feels very out of place.
Mm.
I think it's maybe just like a cool, scary, monster-y type moment. And I'm for cool, scary, monster-y type moments. I fucking love that scene where we're watching like the projector come on and the projector is showing the footage of the projector coming on.
Yes, by that trailer.
And then it gets mad and it smacks it.
That loop is so spooky and frustrating because there's a note on the door that says like, hey, I'm gone. I'll be back soon. Whose loop is that and how the fuck did they get out of it?
Well, doesn't that trailer just drop out of nowhere?
I don't know.
I think they just created that loop to try and trap them in it.
You think so?
Maybe. I don't know.
Because the something about getting them to go to the trailer was a thing in the footage.
Yes, agreed. And I'm almost positive the trailer just like appears out of nowhere. Like
yeah, but a lot of
sky.
Stuff appears out of nowhere because it's almost like a kaleidoscope. Like you don't see loops unless you're in them.
Oh, that's right.
So like I don't think they saw it. And wait, weren't there like tigers and lions outside?
That was a fucking scene where there was like a panther or something, right?
What the fuck?
A mountain lion?
What is this movie?
This movie's wild.
Okay. It is too late to get into Panthers. I have another fun question for you.
Sure.
10 years, loopy loop.
What do I do? What do I do?
Yeah, what do you master? And you can't say guitar, because that's fucking a given. Everybody's going to ask you to sing songs by the fire.
Oh, that's so true. You don't sing along to slide guitar, though. And I've tried.
You can't say.
Slide guitar, different guitar altogether. So hard to do, doesn't make sense. But it's so complicated, and it looks so fucking easy. Those jackass. you remember those devil sticks? I'd get real good at devil sticks.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'd probably learn archery.
I'd learn how to light them on fire and use them.
Okay.
Archery's cool.
And I'd light them on fire, too.
Yeah, of course. How else are you supposed to split that other, like, you got a bullseye, and they're like, oh my god, how's she gonna top that? You're like, I'm gonna light it on fire and split that other bullseye down the center.
Yeah.
After 10 years, you better be able to do
it. After 10 loops of 10 years.
Do you think there's anything to the idea that this guy is trying to become a master of magic, but at the end, his best trick is still something that gets pulled off by the entity?
I think that just shows that he's kind of a dick. Like, he's kind of a douche. And that's why Beer Guy glares at him, because what he does has nothing to do with mastery or taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
It's just showing off to people who don't know the severity of what he's doing.
Okay.
Because he's literally just thrown something outside the loop and it's gotten kind of caught up in the bubble.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure if them escaping the loop is a good ending or not. Like, there's something, like, it's supposed to feel very good and redemptive and they are growing as people, but there's still something dark looming in that movie for me. And it does have kind of like a happy ending. We're going on. It's an adventure. We are starting a new loop. That's how I feel about it. And like that scares me. And maybe it should. I don't know. Like maybe that's just the idea. It's just...
Yeah, but if you're always starting a new loop, you're never looping.
And that's where we're going to leave it. Kim, how would you rate The Endless?
I'm going to give The Endless a 3 out of 4.
I'm giving The Endless a 3.5 out of 4.
Sweet.
For that fun bump.
It's a frustrating bump.
That existential funk bump.
Yeah, this movie is totally frustrating, but it is wonderful. The premise is fucking killer.
Yeah, I was worried that I would not enjoy it as much the second time around, but I need to see it a third time.
Yeah, every time I watch it, there's something else that I have to like ponder over. It frustrates me endlessly.
Ooh, does it?
This is a very skewed episode. Obviously, The Endless gave us a lot of theories to chew over.
And the Happy Death Day was a perfect little fun watch afterward to remind you that the world doesn't have to be full of metaphysical crises.
Although, both of them have metaphysical crises.
Whatever, who cares? Metaphysical is probably the wrong word. I don't care.
Let us know what you thought of The Endless, all of your endless theories, and how you feel about Happy Death Day over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS.
This podcast, of course, is listener supported by fiends like yourself. Head over to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. To support the show and to find out about all the cool perks of being a patron of Nightmare on Film Street, we've got hours and hours of bonus content available for you over there, including Drive Home from the Drive-In reviews of current movies in the theater, as well as the Nightmare on Film Street back catalog, which I'm not as proud about, but it exists if you'd like to hear us when we were just little babies.
You can hear our very first intro music that John made, royalty-free, and our terrible audio quality. It's all there over on Patreon.
But until next week, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.